And now part two of our conversation about Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV.
And then, you know, the documentary transitions. They, you know, just as Jason Handy gets locked up, they transition to, oh, there's another fucking pedophile that is working at the Amanda Show. He goes by the name of Brian Peck. And Brian, I mean, well, first of all, I mean, I first knew of Brian Peck through the Pod Meets World podcast, because they had done an episode shortly before this docuseries came out where Will Friedle and Ryder Strong did admit already that they wrote letters of support for Brian at the trial. They say that they didn't know the full scope of what Brian was being accused of. At the time, the John Doe victim was not identified. It is now identified as Drake Bell. Drake gives an interview in this docuseries. So that's how I was introduced to Brian Peck. I mean, I was introduced to him, like, I guess he was a dialogue coach. He was a guest star on shows like Boy Meets World and later, you know, Amanda Show. He became a dialogue coach for the Amanda Show. That's how him and Drake meet. We go into The Darkest Secret, episode 3. And this is, this is the episode I think that everybody's talking about the most, where Drake Bell admits that he is the John Doe victim in that 2003 arrest of Brian Peck. And I believe it was an article that I read where one of the documentary producers or interviewers were saying how silent the room was when they were taping Drake Bell's admission, you know, him telling his story for the first time in public. And I felt that silence. I don't know about you. I felt it. My wife felt it. I mean, we were just glued to the TV, hanging on Drake's every word, every painful moment of silence. His story has stuck in my mind a lot, like as sort of a reoccurring nightmare. Like, it's one of those stories that just sticks to your head, you know? I liken it to, like, if you get into a car accident, like, that'll stick with you, like, especially if it's like a near fatal car accident. Hearing Drake's story, and especially when you could see him physically get very uncomfortable and emotional as he struggles to give details of how the assault took place. Understandably, he did not give details. I was just like going through his head. Like, I was imagining myself as him and imagining all the thoughts, all the experiences that he had with Brian in his mind. And like, how can you like physically put that out into words? Like, that's a level of vulnerability that, God, if you have that in front of a camera where a lot of people can see it nationally, like, I don't know, man. So what were your thoughts when you read that? I mean, because I think it hits different. It might hit different from me versus you, because I grew up with Drake on the Amanda Show. I watched Drake and Josh. I think Drake and Josh came on mid-2000s when I was like kind of still keeping up with Nickelodeon stuff here and there, but I was, you know, middle school going into high school, I was starting to get to be too old to it. I was starting to get to be too old for Nickelodeon. So I think Drake and Josh was like one of the last shows that I kept up with on Nickelodeon before I transitioned to adulthood, so to speak. So hearing Drake's story and certainly associating it with the real life, unfortunate behavioral choices that he made. And it was a very emotionally rocking experience. So what were your thoughts watching that interview?
This whole transition from episode 2 into episode 3 was like when I knew that this was about to take a sharp turn that emotionally I didn't know if I was ready for. Because at the end of part 2, they bring in Pickle Boy. And I remember Brian Peck from being Pickle Boy, because I remember the Pickle Boy sketches from all that and seeing him. And I'm like, oh, this is so hilarious. This is funny. Because I remember specifically the Ray Romano scene with the pickle and the glory hole in the bathroom. I remember specifically seeing that as a kid. So at first when I saw those images flashed, I'm like, whoa, oh my God, what am I about to hear here? And then I didn't know anything about Brian Peck until this and all the like social media stuff started to really come up about him. Because I didn't watch Drake and Josh. I have seen a few episodes of Drake and Josh last year. That was the first time I actually saw the show, just rewatching it with a friend who had seen it for fun, and I had never seen it. So he's like, oh, let me show you the show. And that's like my introduction to Drake, really. I didn't know much about him because I think I was just a little too old for his shows. But then once we got into the episode, it was hard to watch. I sat in silence, I think, through all of it. I think I smoked a blunt halfway through because I was like, my anxiety is spiking right now. And it was just something that physically made me uncomfortable. Like I was uncomfortable to the point where I just didn't sit right in my chest. I felt like I just had this heavy just squeezing on my chest watching it. Where I tried to rewatch all four episodes, not fully, but to just try to take my notes. And when I got to episode three, I found myself fast forwarding through so much of it because it was just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I just, I couldn't hear it again.
Understandable. I mean, well, first of all, props to you for even wanting to rewatch it in the first place. This is a docuseries that I would not rewatch. Just like I wouldn't rewatch, you know, 12 Years a Slave. I mean, there are just certain experiences in TV and film where it's like, whoa. I don't regret watching that, a moving piece of content. And especially this, this is a story that needs to be told. But man, I mean, the emotions that it brings about in you, it's one of those things that I can accept as just a one-time thing. And the memories that I will carry from that experience will be enough. Like I don't need to revisit it. I will say, thank fucking goodness. I mean, when Drake talked about how the mom of his girlfriend at the time was catching on to like something must be going on with this Brian thing, because you know the trajectory. The dad brought up, God, it must have been to like a makeup person or just somebody at the Amanda show who was working there. Like it was the dad who first brought up, like, wait a minute, there's like something a little off about this Brian guy. Like, you know, the way he is always hanging around Drake, like, you know, playfully touching him. And, you know, there's a, it could be a situation where Drake is trying to get dressed in a certain difficult costume and Brian being like, oh, hey, let me help you, Drake, blah, blah, blah. And like this fucking employee at the Amanda show responding with, like, oh, well, Drake's dad, he's gay. He kind of sound homophobic. And I feel like that stupid shit, like all I thought about was like, oh God, that's like ammunition for ignorant, stupid ass people that have affiliated the queer community with pedophilia. Like, I don't, like you being a part of the queer community, like tell me your experience with that. Is that something that you've heard a lot from those who are just ignorant and not open-minded at all?
Yeah. Growing up as a kid, we would always hear like, oh, that person's gay. Or that person, I'm not going to say the words, was that. And they equated that person being gay with somebody who was going to touch me and hurt me. So somebody who was like going to sexually assault me is what they would always portray people who were gay. Queer is what the umbrella is I'm going to use when I talk about it. So I heard that stereotype over and over and over as a kid. But then to hear this adult be told by another adult, like, oh, he's only touchy-feely because he's gay. That's not what being gay is. That's not what gay people are. And I hate the fact that there's this even connection in people's head that that is what gay is, because it's not.
So I wonder, like, do you, you know, based on what you know about Brian, do you think that he was enabling that perception that like, oh, like, you know, if you're someone who may be straight and you're looking at a gay adult, like a 40 something year old man who just happens to be gay, being inappropriate with a teenager, like, oh, that means you're homophobic. Like no thought of the fact that, no, this is an adult being very inappropriate with a child. Like, do you think there was something about Brian that enabled that he was part of that crowd that's like, oh yeah, I could kind of get away with what I'm doing? Because, you know, at the time, I mean, we're talking, you know, fucking late 90s, early 2000s. Unfortunately, the queer community wasn't as respected as it's become now. So
it makes me think, when I heard that was the excuse that was given to Drake's father, that Brian has done this to other people currently on the set, previously on the set, or people that they just know outside of the set. And he's tried to excuse away his behavior of, oh, I'm just gay, this is what we do. Something like that is what I'm assuming that he did, because along with grooming these children, he was grooming the adults who were around him too. So he had to find a way to manipulate them and groom them into believing that, oh, it's harmless touching. Gay people just touch. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what it kind of reminded me of is Kevin Spacey's Me Too moment a few years ago. He was you know, accused of sexually harassing all these men, and I think more boys than men. And because, you know, we because I think he kind of perceived that there still might be this, like, you know, sympathetic victimhood within the queer community, he also chose that to be the time where he came out as a way to say, oh, hey, like, you know, please excuse me, like, I'm gay and it's not easy for us people in the queer community. Please excuse all these essentially crimes that I did. And I hate that, because God knows how many people in the queer community there are still that are struggling to come out, struggling to accept themselves, and then they have this to go up against, you know?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it so much. It's so icky. To me, it's just disgusting. Like, I think about Kevin Spacey's situation. I remember when he posted the video, or it was an interview or something. I saw it online where he's like, oh, well, you know, just so you know, I'm a part of the queer community. Or he was like, I'm gay or something. And I remember I threw my phone. I was like, bitch, don't you sit here and try to say that, well, you did what you did because you're gay, or we're supposed to be more sympathetic because you're gay. That has nothing to do with what you did. You assaulted somebody. You hurt somebody. You took from somebody, and it's not okay. It's like the same thing that we have going right now in the media with everything that's happening with Diddy, the things that happened with him assaulting people, the basketball player, what's his name, Dwight Howard. It seems like people in the media are trying to say, well, oh my God, did you know he's gay? I always knew he was gay. Oh, gay. Gay is not the bad thing here. We don't need to focus on gay. It's the fact that these people were assaulted, they were hurt, they are victims, and they are saying that this person hurt me, and that's the true crime. Gay has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And Trevor Noah, on his podcast, he brought up the same point that you brought up. And I think that's a perfect point to bring up. Unfortunately, there is still this stigma, you know, as far as the relationship between the straight community and the queer community, where even when it's a simple matter of like, oh, here's a guy that like committed crimes, and all of a sudden the story has turned into, oh, wait a minute, he's gay, he's bisexual, like, what's going on there? Like, it's like, no, like, I thought we were over this thing being a taboo thing, like, forget about that. So I totally agree with you on that. That's definitely a great observation. And sorry, I know we're kind of, you know, going on with that great point there, but to circle back to the mom of Drake's girlfriend at the time, catching on to the strangeness of this 40-something-year-old Brian Peck. And remember that moment where Drake was talking about how he was trying to get away from this assault experience? I think over a period of 6 months, Brian was assaulting Drake. And it got to a point where, you know, Drake was, you know, just trying to, you know, get as many excuses as possible to get away from him. He's, you know, at his girlfriend's house, and Brian is persistently calling Drake because they had plans to go to Disneyland, which, wow, I mean, when you describe it like that, it's like that's the most cliche child molestery situation ever. And through the persistent calling, you know, thankfully that mom of the girlfriend just picked up on the fact that, like, wait a minute, what? Like, why? So she has a sit down intimate conversation with Drake, like, hey, you can talk to me. Like, what's really going on? Because a 40-something-year-old man stalk calling a teenager like this, like, that's not normal.
Nothing about that situation was normal. Not a single bit of it. Like, leading up to that moment, I was just watching in astonishment how this man literally, like, cut people out of Drake's life who would have been more perceptive to him and been like, hey, this isn't okay, starting with his dad. And then seeing how he took the other people, like his mom, and made it where, like, no, I'm the good person. Come in. You're good to be here. All these things are fine. And to just watch how this man did this to this boy. And then on top of that, nobody was stopping it or interfering. And then the people did, there were more obstacles put in their way to make it even harder to just communicate with Drake. So when I saw the scene where he's talking about being at his girlfriend's house and the mom is knowing all this calling and like, dude, this dude is like out of control, I felt like she was an angel put in his place to be like, hey, something's not right here. Nobody else is calling it out, but I'm going to call it out. And I'm not going to take no for an answer. I'm taking you somewhere to get you help.
Yeah, because Brian drove a wedge between Drake and his dad. You saw the dad get really emotional recounting, like, oh, you know, how he had to, like, sacrifice a relationship with his son. Because at the end of the day, like, yes, it hurts that Drake felt this way and Drake wanted to separate himself from his dad, but he wanted to do what Drake wanted. And, you know, then I believe Drake was more on the side of just being with his mom more than his dad. And unfortunately, you know, the mom didn't catch on to Brian. She just kind of thought like, you know, he seems like a harmless, fun guy. The dad saw it all along. And I think there was someone on social media that I thought unfairly went after Drake's mom for not, you know, seeing Brian for who he was. And this is a theme that we're going to get into as we go on. I just, for people that supported Brian or thought nothing of him or didn't pick up on hints, I am a strong believer in finding the goodness in people and showing grace. I think that for me, I can detect when it's a person who innocently just didn't know, didn't factor that in their mind versus someone who like had the clear evidence right in front of them and just seemed to not pick it out. Like, what would you like? Let's say Dan Schneider, for instance, when, you know, Brian gets arrested, Dan kind of puts the pieces together, privately finds out it's Drake. He calls Drake to ask if he's okay, if there's anything he needs to, if you know, if Drake needs any help, like, let him know. And it seemed like a pretty short phone conversation between them. But what did you view Dan's response as? Do you think that Dan kind of knew that Brian could have been this person all along? Or did you think that Dan just innocently didn't know and just kind of caught up to it afterwards, like a lot of people seem to do?
I want to believe that Dan did not know. Yeah. I want to believe that. That is what I want to believe, but I do not believe that. And I don't believe that because you're around this person a lot. People said you were around him a lot. You worked together for years. There are signs and things that you may have picked up on and you ignored the red flags for it, which makes me think that you did know, but you were ignoring the red flags because you've got this massive career in front of you. You want to be this massive person on television. You have this power trip happening. And I think that that could be the thing. And it is not excusing it because to me, it's unexcusable. People like Brian Peck, they groom everybody around them. They try to condition them to think that this is normal. This is okay. And it doesn't help when you have all this power and this apparatus. And then you're friends essentially with the most powerful person here. So nobody's really going to challenge you on what you do. So I feel like Dan was probably a part of that grooming process when they first developed whatever relationship or bond they have. But there had to be signs. You had to see something. There's something you had to know. For you to be the only person to figure it out and reach out to Drake first, that lets me know you were observing signs and you either intentionally ignored them or chose not to say anything.
Because this is coming off the heels of Jason Handy. We're talking about two criminal child molesters on one kid show.
Yeah.
Surely, after the whole Jason Handy thing went down, someone, HR, Dan, someone could have had a like a watchful eye, like, okay, like, right, let's take what we noticed from Jason and maybe apply that to someone else. Like, in other words, all right, here are characteristics, here are signs, here are behavioral patterns that we picked up from Jason. And if we pick up on this from another person, then let's keep an eye on them. But no, it was, okay, Jason Handy did his fucked up shit. He got arrested. He's not working for us. So let's move on and just act like there's nothing wrong with the working environment.
Yeah, there should have been something. Like you said, they had Jason Handy there. Y'all knew what he did. Y'all knew. And Drake's dad specifically went to a person and said, hey, I don't like this. So in a situation like that, if a parent goes for their child and says, hey, I don't like this is happening, and you've already had a pedophile that was on your set, you should take that parent's concern paramount to anything else. If a kid says it, same thing. That should have been stopping everything. Immediately, whoever's in charge should have been like, hey, this is not okay. We need to stop this, investigate this man, and get him out.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there was the bias of the charm of Brian Peck. I mean, you know, God, these fucking child molester groomers, I mean, they really know how to charm people with their personality. They just have a very quote unquote inviting, warm, charismatic thing about themselves. And I'm sure that whoever Drake's dad complained to, they just, it's like, no, Brian, like sweet, lovable, funny, quirky, friendly Brian, like, no, that can't be true. They were biased on that rather than taking it seriously, like, oh, this is a legitimate HR level work complaints. We clearly did not have that in development at the time, especially late 90s, early 2000s show business. It was just, we're just going to keep on going and whatever. Like, you're probably insane, Drake's dad. And yeah, they probably just saw it as a typical, like, overly dramatic child actor stage parent thing. And, you know, turned out he wasn't too dramatic.
They didn't listen. They never listened. And there are times where I am willing to accept, like, hey, the times were just different. The times were different. This is a child. This is a child. We know it is not okay behavior. So that, to people who do say that in a way of like defense for anybody who's like, oh, well, the times were different. No, if we don't take care of children and make sure children are safe no matter what, then we're not taking care of anything.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then we get to our final episode here, Too Close to the Sun. And we get deeper into Brian Peck's court case. And we learn, you know, going back to that bias. I mean, there's Brian had connections, you know, and that kind of fed into Drake wanting to maintain a relationship with him. I mean, before the assault happened, Drake looked at him like, oh, my God, here's a guy that I have a lot in common with. We love old show business. He has all these connections. And especially, you know, with the assault, it was just that unfair power dynamic of like, shit, like Brian could make my life and career a living hell if I don't agree to this assault experience. So a lot of Hollywood connections that Brian has, and those people did not see that side of Brian that unfortunately Drake saw in private. And we got to see some of the names of the people who wrote letters of support for Brian in that trial. I wonder what you thought about these, because pretty much all these people now after the fact, after the docuseries, we're talking about Wilfred L. and Ryder Strong from Boy Meets World. Again, on the Pod Meets World podcast, they had an episode a while back where Ryder, Will, and Danielle, they talked with a therapist about the Brian Peck stuff. Now, this was shortly before the docuseries was released. So my thinking is that maybe they detected that this would be released. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, you know, good. I mean, whatever. I mean, if they did it specifically because of the timing of this, then I see, to me, I see it regardless as like, hey, you're owning up to your mistake. You're putting out a public apology. You know, still there are people on social media that are ignorant and they pretend like the episode didn't exist. And they're just like, oh, you know, cancel it, apologize. That's another story. And then we, again, awkwardly, we have Rich and Beth Carell. I mean, you and I have spoke with Rich for Family Matters, the 86 episodes he directed. And Beth, we have to thank Beth for connecting us with Rich for that experience. So what was your reaction to that point in the docuseries when it was discovered that Rich and Beth wrote letters? Because I was with Tony and I was like, oh, that's awkward.
Episode 4 made me the angriest.
Yeah.
This is where I was most angry at everything that we watched over these 4 episodes. The letters of support, every single person who wrote a letter of support should be ashamed. And I'm saying that specifically because saying you did not know what he did is not acceptable. Even after the fact, now that this documentary has come out and you want to apologize, it's still unacceptable to me. I, as a person who is just sitting here watching this, I was so infuriated. Brian Peck was arrested on August 19th of 2003. He was officially declared arrested by the LAPD on August 20th of 2003. He wasn't sentenced for the crime that he pled no contest to. No contest means that he did not detest anything that happened. He pled guilty. That is essentially what he did. He admitted to what he did. And then he was sentenced in October of 2004. So we have over a year after he admitted to doing this to getting to his sentence. Everybody who says, oh, well, I didn't know. It was public information. Yeah. The internet was not the thing it is now back then. Smartphones were not the thing they are now back then. But that information was available online and it was public record. This is a court case and all that information of what occurred was available to anybody who wanted to get that information. So as somebody who said, hey, I'm going to write a letter of support for somebody who's going through a legal situation, but they are being sentenced. So we know that this person is guilty. They are being sentenced and you didn't do the due diligence to find out what they did. Mm. I can't accept that I did not know as an answer. Some of the letters, some of the things that were in the letters, and I don't know what specifically was in the Carell's letters. I did see snippets in the actual documentary, but I didn't find the actual letter to read the whole thing. But there was victim blaming in these letters. People saying that they were shocked and they couldn't believe what happened. happened. Some people said that there must have been extreme situation or temptation to do what happened.
Yeah. I was the temptation part. That was the part that got me. I was like, we have an adult and we have a child. I think Brian, as the adult, can hold his own enough to not be tempted by a child. So we're going to insinuate that Drake Bell just found a way to forcefully pin down a 40-year-old man. Have you seen him? His little skinny, scrawny 15-year-old self? Like, that part, that confused the fuck out of me.
The victim blaming alone. I was like, what? I'm like, you can't be serious. Now, where I specifically have a problem with Rich Carrell is after this came out, of course, we got the apology tours from everybody who's like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. I'm so sorry. In the letter that you wrote and the snippet that I did see, you said not only was he a good man, but you would work with him again. And then you worked with him again. You put more money in this man's pocket. And we're supposed to believe that you're all of a sudden sorry now. All of a sudden, you're sorry.
Yeah. And what confused me, if I have this correct, I believe the timeline is Brian gets arrested. He does his time. He gets out not too long after. He gets hired by Disney Channel. I believe Sweet Life of Zack and Cody was a show that he worked on, a show that Rich Carrell also worked on. And then I read something where upon learning of his record, Disney Channel terminated him. And I would have to think that Brian Peck's arrest was pretty public enough where Disney would have had the logic to not hire him. I think the best that was done was that, like, oh yeah, let's rehire this guy, but let's not put him around any kids. I think there was like literally a physical separation. So it's that strange thing of like, oh, okay, you're aware of it. You're aware of the danger of this man, but I guess because it's Hollywood, the show must go on. He has the connections. He has the experience that values above anything else. So yeah, let's find a way to get him back, but also sort of acknowledge that he's a terrible man that shouldn't be around kids.
It's... How can you rationalize that except greed and the want for money and just power? Because just thinking about that, you're saying, hey, we're going to bring this man back. We know what he did. It's public information. And even if you say you don't know what it is, it was after 2000. We have the ability to easily do background checks. You didn't even need to talk to this man. All you need to do is take his social security number, punch it into a computer system, and would have came up with all these red flags saying pedophile. All these things would have come up for you easily. So again, that excuse of, oh, we didn't know. And you know what about Disney? They knew, they just didn't want to say anything. And they didn't say anything until I think it was an article published in the New York Times exposing Brian Peck working for Disney. Like, they weren't going to say anything.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it was that classic thing of like, oh shit, it's public that he now works for us. So we got to let him go so we look good. Okay. So mm-hmm. It's the classic thing of, oh, we're not sorry for hiring Brian Peck. We're sorry for getting caught.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. That was the strategy they took. The same strategy everybody who wrote one of those damn letters of support. You're sorry you got caught. You're not sorry that you wrote it.
Well, this has a different level of conversation because you know what? The details that you had mentioned about him pleading no contest, that means he admitted guilt, sentencing, all that, and the public information going along with what he did. Yeah, I to be honest, I did not fully think about that before this recording. So yeah, based on all those facts, it would seem that all those people that wrote letters of support, Will, Ryder, Rich, Beth, they seem like they had an opportunity to find out the full extent of the crimes. But unfortunately, show business being show business, people just have that sort of blinder. I mean, maybe they were just too busy with their own lives and what they were doing. And maybe they saw value in whatever Hollywood connections Brian has. Maybe that affected their bottom line, their payment, if they badmouthed Brian in some way. So that probably went into these letters of support. It was heartbreaking to hear Drake talk about, you know, that courtroom moment when you have this shit ton of Hollywood support for Brian Peck physically there. And then who is Drake's support? I think it was like his family. It's like his mom, his sister, dad. I think that's all who supported him physically in that courtroom.
Yeah, that's all he had on his side. His mom, his sister, his dad. And Brian Peck's side was full of people who are part of this industry, which just lets you know about their character alone. You're standing behind a pedophile. We know what he did. I don't want to be someone who sounds like I'm like holding a grudge or want to beat a dead horse. But again, if we don't keep our children safe, they can't be safe. And standing behind somebody who did something to a child, it could be an adult. The people who wrote the letters, they may have been told like, oh, it was an adult that was assaulted. Assault is assault. It's not okay to stand behind these people.
Yeah. And I think in response to Will and Ryder apologizing for this on the Pod Meets World podcast, Drake, just like you, not buying it. He says that, you know, that they were still full grown adults at the time when they wrote those letters of support, meaning that they had the intelligence, the ability to actually do their homework and find that, oh shit, like, you know, Brian seems like a bad person. And if someone made a brilliant point about this, is that like when you meet someone and the first impression, maybe the only impression that they give you is like, oh, happy-go-lucky, charming, charismatic personality. I think there is that tendency to just go off of that. I think we tend to forget that people are multi-layered. Like the person that you saw as happy, bubbly, whatever, a minute later, the next day, they could have a whole nother side that you just happen to not have seen, you know? People are complicated. Brian, sure, I can believe that he had charisma, humor, and could have been pleasant to be around. But I can also believe it's clearly based on what has happened. Oh, the guy was a fuck sick piece of shit. So people are not just one thing. You know, we have layers as humans.
We do. We have layers as humans. There's things you'll never know about somebody. You could be in their space forever. It's just when I just see how these children were failed in so many ways, and it was just excused away by this big apparatus that they had no power to fight against. And to think that that was my dream to be on one of those shows, or see, it was like, oh, this looks so cool. And the whole time it was this monster of a thing.
And I go back to I forgot her name. Do you know the name of the female Black cast member from season one of The Amanda Show who spoke out and told her story?
That is, oh no, why am I blanking on her name right now?
But shout out to her, first of all, for telling her story and based on her unfortunate experience. Because I briefly remember like a blip, like, oh yeah, she was on the first season of The Amanda Show. And then I think Josh Peck replaced her in the second season. And based on her telling of the story, it seems like there was a racial element that added to her frustrating experience there. But when she had talked about how, like, you know, if someone had asked her if she would put her children through acting, how she wouldn't have even a millisecond before she said no. I mean, when you see this docuseries, if you were thinking of like, oh God, stardom for your children, this might make you think differently. My evolution of thought is like when I was a kid, like, oh yeah, God, that looked awesome. I definitely want to be a star, blah, blah, blah. And then of course, seeing and hearing about all the things that child stars have gone through, the unfortunate things.
Right.
Now being thankful and grateful for a normal private childhood. And now being at the age where, you know, my wife and I, we want to eventually have kids. The way I perceive show business, because I still have a passion for it. Look, if my kid dreams about being in show business, great. Like, I will be supportive of whatever you're passionate about. Would I get you in show business at 8 or 9 or 7? Probably not, because show business, as you can tell, Andrew, from this docuseries and just from observing it as a whole, like through celebrity stories and shit, it's a fucking beast, man. You gotta have a thick fucking skin, and kids don't typically have that kind of skin. Like, when you're a kid, I mean, you are vulnerable, you are learning about the world, you're learning about yourself, you're learning about your appearance. And to have something like show business come and tell you at an early age, like, oh, you're terrible if you don't do this, or oh, you look fat, like, change your appearance, like, as a kid, like, hearing all that, that's a lot. So my answer would be like, hey kid, go to, sure, if you want to strive for show business, strive for it. But I'm not going to fucking put you in while you're a kid. I'm going to let you be a fucking kid. And then when you're grown enough to, you know, have a thick skin and have more security and assurance about yourself, then sure, if you think you have the confidence, go for it. Go for it, you know?
Yeah. Her name is Raquel Lee Blue, I think it's just pronounced her last name. Raquel Lee Blue, I apologize. You're in my notes and I did not mention you.
Sounds like chicken cordon bleu.
It kind of does. I like her last name. When she said immediately, no, I wouldn't allow my kid to be in show business, I understood it right away. wanting to protect your kids from everything. I get it. Yeah. As somebody who is not a parent, I don't know how I would react when my child says, hey, I want to be in show business. I'm not going to discourage them, but like you, I don't plan on taking them into that world at a very young age. And just knowing what I know now as an adult, I'm going to do my best to be diligent if that's the route they want to go to protect them. But man, is it a disgusting beast that we are just learning more and more and more about.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I mean, I would, if I had a kid that was interested in show business, like I was growing up and I still am, I would take them through the same route that I went through. Like my mom, you know, took me to an acting class when I was in high school. Like that really, really got the bug. So it's like, hey, you know, there's local community theater, there's productions and classes happening at like your school. Like, sure. Like go about that, do your thing. If you want to go to college and study it further, great. I would say at least let's go through a high school experience at the most. And then after that, we'll see what happens because, you know, typically after high school is when you start to blossom into adulthood. So,
yeah. Like I think about it now, even myself as an adult, if I were to have a kid, when I saw all that as a kid, I was like, kids can be stand-up comedians. This seems so much fun. I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. To this day, I still have the desire to go do comedy and to see how just toxic it was. And I remember as a kid, my parents took me to one of those little star search things where your kid can get onto Nickelodeon. I am so happy that they did not progress me through that.
Oh, what did you see?
I didn't see anything. It was a simple audition and I made it to the final audition for a role for a, I think it was a gum commercial, like a Minty Fresh gum or something. And we had to fly to LA for the actual commercial shoot and everything that went along with it. My parents were like, no, we're not paying that money to take you all the way there for something you may not get. As a kid, I was angry. I didn't understand it. But as an adult, I am so happy because who knows what could have happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And actually, I remember when I think this was when I was still in high school, like while I was like getting involved with theater through classes and productions at school, there was like this like fucking nationwide Nickelodeon Disney casting call that was happening in Hartford, Connecticut. And I went to that and apparently I did a good enough audition where like, you know, they wanted me for a callback. And the only thing that was holding me back, my mom explained, was like, oh, yeah, they're like requiring like fucking, I don't know, $9,900. It was hundreds to thousands of dollars to get to the next callback process because I think maybe you had to like travel or whatever. And at the time, I was like, oh, darn, that sucks that mom can't get me into it. Now, looking back at it, not only do I think, oh, that's probably it was probably best for me to grow up normally, but also I think that might have been a scam.
Yeah.
It, you know, kind of reminded me of like those talent agents. Agencies that I would, that I used to sort of search and affiliate myself with briefly, where they would be like, oh, yeah, you can join our agency, but, you know, you got to pay for all these classes with us first. And usually the way an agency works is like they don't get paid until you get paid. And if they're asking you for money up front, like, oh, you got to pay to be with us, then that's usually a big red flag.
It is. That's already a big red flag. They shouldn't be asking you for money up front. Learn that. My parents took me to one of those things, too, where it was like, oh, you got to pay all this money. And it was like, no, this is a scam. It's a full-on scam. Yeah, it's just it, the way people scam and they want to get money. And you see that it's this big business. And the funny thing is, after all the opportunities that I went through that route, when I actually got on a TV set and a movie production set and actually worked on a movie, it was not through any of those channels. It was through knowing somebody who helped me get there that I actually knew as a friend.
It's not through paying many, many dollars. It's just like they say, it's about who you know. Sometimes you are in the right place at the right time with the right person and you can get a lot farther. To circle back to the Quiet on the Set docuseries. So as we close out our recap here, I think in sort of the final moments of the last episode, we get into Dan becoming even more successful in the 2000s with Nickelodeon shows like Zoey 101, iCarly, Victorious. And wow, if we thought we saw innuendos in like all that and the Amanda Show, we really saw them with his 2000 shows. I mean, we see I guess there was like web only footage related to Victorious where Ariana Grande's character is pouring water all over her body on a bed. Do you remember what she was doing to get to that point?
So I don't know because I never watched the show and I didn't try to find more about the clips, but I saw in the docuseries the scene where she's laying back on the bed and she says, "I'm thirsty," and then starts pouring the water down her neck. And I didn't know Ariana Grande other than her singing. So to see her here, one was already a shocker for me because I didn't know where she came from. But then to see what they made her do, I'm like, nobody saw a problem with this at all. Like, it doesn't make sense. Even if she's playing like a character who's like Eddie Winslow and just like to be the doof, this isn't normal doofy behavior. This is something way more, and the innuendo was through the roof.
Yeah, because she was like a preteen or a teenager when she did that. And I mean, my God, like when she was pouring water all over herself like that, I'm like, wow, this is kind of like a supermodel in like a hip hop spring break video doing that. It just reeks inappropriate sexual suggestiveness. And when Ariana was squeezing the potato the way she was and making the noises that she was from her mouth, and then we have Jamie Spears and Zoe, like the other, I guess that the girl that played Jamie Spears' friend in the show, who also spoke out as herself in the docuseries, a moment in the show where slimy goop squirt thing was like, put into Jamie's face. And, we now know that one of the crew members, or Dan, said behind the scenes jokingly, like, haha, that's a cum shot. I mean, and then the mini skirts that they had to wear on these shows that were so short that they had to wear biker shorts underneath. Dan didn't care, man. He had the power and he just thought, sure, why not? Let's get away with some edgy fucking shit.
The fully went on, and this was sexualization of children. It's disgusting. I don't even need to see the shows now. I don't need to see them. The fact that I saw these clips, the fact that these clips even exist, I don't need to see them. This was that era of Nickelodeon where if I was just lounging around and I'm like, ooh, is SpongeBob on? And I go there and I would see some really weird crap, like the feet stuff or all those, like, I just feel uncomfortable saying it. Cum shots in kids' television shows. This is the most disgusting sentence to say.
Yeah. And the actress from Zoe who talked about that, I mean, I believe she was getting emotional when talking about that because here she is. She's like 12 years old. Of course, she doesn't know what a fucking cum shot is. She doesn't get the joke. She's not laughing with the crew members. She's just generally confused. Like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm a kid. I don't know any of this shit. And then, of course, we get to Dan Schneider eventually being fired amid the Me Too movement picking up steam by 2018. And he had the apology video that we already mentioned. And look, I mean, I can't dispute someone apologizing. I think if there is a full acceptance of the actions that you did, the behavior that you displayed, and you are simply saying, I'm sorry for all of that, then, look, there are cynics out there, understandably, who are like, no, fuck you. Like, you're not sorry. And you're only sorry that you got caught. I tend to come from the standpoint of like, okay, you're sorry. To be honest, I didn't even expect the apology video from him. I thought that if anything, if we were going to hear from Dan, it would just be more statements of denial, like, hey, everything was approved by the network and I didn't do anything wrong. But, he's been out of the spotlight for 6 years. He's been, I think, out of work for 6 years ever since he got fired from Nickelodeon. So according to him, he had time to digest and watch the docuseries and came to the point where over the course of a 19-minute interview from, one of his former employees, we interviewed him. He essentially just apologized for everything. And when you hear that, I mean, I didn't see the full 19-minute video. I mean, I just heard or looked at quotes from it via an article. When you hear or see something like that, like, what is your response? Someone who did all these awful things over the course of a, 20-year period and is having a 19-minute video hosted by one of his former employees who clearly is on his side. And he just kind of says, hey, I'm sorry for all of it. And I could have done better. And I want to do better. And I'm totally okay. By the way, he said on the record that he was totally okay working with Nickelodeon to censor all of that inappropriate content, to edit it or refuse it from airing. As of now, there was a story that came out where they're still hasn't been a conversation between Nickelodeon and Dan Schneider as to taking that step to censor or remove that inappropriate content. So I don't know. What do you make of Dan Schneider's apology thing?
I am still waiting for the apology.
Okay.
To be very honest, I am still waiting for the apology. The problem that I have, this entire documentary was made. They reached out to Dan Schneider for comment. They wanted to interview him. He had an opportunity to apologize during the course of the documentary, but chose not to. He wrote multiple statements, but the statement in the last episode is the one that I hate the most. There was an apology. He just said, oh, well, everything I did was approved by everybody on set. The parents were on set. Production was on set. The higher ups went and approved everything before I did it. I got everything approved. Good job for you getting your passport stamped. That's not an apology. And you released that along with this docuseries, when I'm pretty sure you had to know what things were in the docuseries. We know in Hollywood that when something's made, any production, when it's made, there's a copy of it that's already ready to watch that you have to present to studios for them to be able to see it. And screeners go out, and a screener is a copy of whatever the production of work is that gets sent to people who can be on these boards to vote for things to win awards, things for critique. So there were copies of this final product that were out there that I'm sure he had to get in contact with somebody. If not, he just received it and he was able to see everything that was in it. And that was the statement you chose to give to them. And now you're apologizing. So you're like, oh, I wrote a statement for this. Don't tell me you didn't watch it. You had to watch it. It doesn't make sense to write a statement about something about yourself that's being reflected in a movie or a docuseries and you didn't watch it. Why would you write a statement? It doesn't make sense on why you do that. So then for him to go on this podcast or do this 19-minute interview, which like you, I did not watch. I saw some clips from it. And one of the ones was, hey, I owe people a really big apology. We'll start apologizing. Let's start giving people back the money that you took from them. You took jobs from people. You destroyed families. You really ripped apart childhoods. You did a lot of terrible things. And some general apology of, oh, I'm so sorry for the things that I did. It was a different time. That doesn't excuse the behavior. And you did not take accountability and responsibility for what you did. So that's why I can't accept the apology. That's why I feel like it's just an apology where it's like, oh, this came out about me. I got caught, but I'm going to sit this little statement and do this little video. And it's still in the video where he's like, I'm apologizing. The scene that you brought up where he's like, I want to work with Nickelodeon to get the content removed or find a way to censor it. In his own words, he says, I want to be paid to remove the content that I made that was terrible for children to fix the issue that I created.
Wow.
You can't make it up.
Wow. And the Zoey 101 cast member, she did a live YouTube stream response of Dan's apology. And while some people accepted Dan's apology or have been on Dan's side from the beginning, the cast member that we already spoke of, who eventually got dismissed from the show, unfortunately. She, you know, had said that a better thing to do would have been for Dan to privately apologize to each and every person that he has hurt over the years, rather than just this general sort of PR-ish public apology. So someone did make a good point that I agreed with, that the fact that he was interviewed by a former cast member from iCarly, i.e. someone who used to work for him, that's obviously someone that's biased, that's been Team Dan from the beginning and wants to show the good side of Dan, and maybe he's looking to Dan as a way to benefit his career at some point. I think someone made a good point of it being a very like echo chamber feel, by having that former employee of yours interview you. So I agree with that. So we'll see. To the 90s nostalgia diehard fans who are seriously hurt, depressed, because, you know, I get it. Like, this has been escapist comfort food for you. And now you find out all the stuff that's been happening behind the scenes. And it's got to be very devastating. I don't know about you. I want to hear your relationship with the 90s childhood shows that you've had over the years, and especially since this docuseries. But for me, I mean, it's been quite a while since I've watched something from the 90s recreationally, like one of my like specific childhood shows, like All That, the Amanda Show. I mean, there was a period in middle school where I was super, super nostalgic for the 90s. And that just seemed odd in retrospect, because it was like, like, oh, it was like only 10 years ago. And I was 11 or 12 year old kid saying, oh, the good old days, like already the good old days at 11 or 12 years old. I'm saying that, like, what the fuck? I mean, now, I mean, the 90s are hotter than they ever were. And I don't know. I think along the way, as I've grown up, I've had more of an acceptance of the present, more of an acceptance that there's a future coming. And I have just accepted that whatever pleasant memories that I've had from my 90s childhood shows, like, I'm fine with keeping them there. I know that when I watch them now, it's not going to be the same as when I watched them when I was a kid. So I just left them there. So I look at these stories and I say, okay, this is hurtful. This is unfortunate. This certainly makes me think differently about these shows, but it definitely doesn't kill me in the way that I'm sure it kills the diehard fans of these shows that are still watching them to this day to, you know, escape and have the comfort food of their childhood in mind. So what's your relationship with these shows and how's it affected you?
I mean, these shows were my childhood. Like, yeah. All that skin is, even as an adult, I remember loving all that as a kid because I just thought the concept was cool. Like, we had Kenan and Kel, we had the Good Burger Movie, and all these kid shows, Salute Your Shorts, all these different shows that I just fell in love with as a kid. Now, all the live action stuff, I've never actually gone back and watched any of that from my childhood, aside from Family Matters right now. But like the live action kid shows, I never rewatched them because I was more of a cartoon person. So the cartoons really spoke to me more than like the live action things. It makes me feel weird that as a kid, I got to enjoy these things. But then I also had to talk to myself as an adult and say, Andrew, you were a kid. You didn't know. And in a way, I think there's like this group consciousness of feeling guilty for watching something and laughing at it while the person who was creating it was visibly uncomfortable or in pain that some people are feeling. And it's not your fault.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. It is not your fault that you watched it. It's not your fault that you enjoyed it as a kid. It's not your fault that it made like a happy moment for you as a kid because you were a kid. And these were things that were not supposed to happen to kids, but you were a kid and you didn't understand that. And it sucks. It puts like a little sour taste in my mouth, but it doesn't ruin my childhood as far as like, hey, the 90s for me were still the time that I enjoyed. But I know now as an adult, older, I'm never going to show my nephews or niece all that or anything like that. I'm not going to be like, oh, these are the shows I grew up with as a kid. You guys should check them out. I don't have the desire to do that anymore. Not for these shows.
Especially since the docuseries, I don't have a desire to show the kids I would like to have someday this stuff. I mean, in general, I've never been into this idea that, and I don't know, maybe this kind of started with our generation as millennials, or maybe this kind of started with Gen X or boomers, but I have noticed those adults that are so attached to their past, to their childhood, that if they have kids, like, that's what they're feeding them, you know? Like, oh man, AC/DC, that was when music was actually good. Oh, Salute Your Shorts, or the Dick Van Dyke Show, that's when TV was good. So let me show that to my kids so that they know what is good. And I don't like that. I don't like that. Sure, have your passion about your childhood, but also have respect for the fact that your child it was not born when you were. They're born in the present. So yeah, they could have experience with your content, but also allow them to have experience with content of their generation, content that's made for them now, so that they can at least have a balance, you know, a choice.
Right.
So I've never been for those hardliners who are like, yeah, my childhood had the best stuff and I'm going to only show that to my kids because that was the only best stuff. Like, that's unfair. That's unfair. So yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of the shows that I grew up with on Nickelodeon, that you and I grew up with on Nickelodeon, I'm right with you. I'm content with just leaving them in the past, unless we decide to do a rewatch podcast of them, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm content with just saying, hey, I enjoyed it at the time that I was a kid watching them. I'm not going to feel bad about seeing stuff that it turns out the children behind the scenes were not enjoying too much because at the time I was a kid and it was made for me and I didn't know. Now that I do know, I think all I can say is, hey, I'm so sorry that you guys had to go through what you went through. You didn't deserve to do that. So I think you can have both thoughts. I think you could be appreciative of your childhood and also very sympathetic to the fact that the children who made your childhood didn't get to have a childhood.
Yeah. That's I don't have anything else to say about it. That's the perfect way to sum it up for me.
Well, this has been a conversation. Oh, by the way, shout out to Steve Burns, Steve from Blue's Clues. Did you see what he did on TikTok?
No, I actually didn't see.
Oh, God. So he continually shows us why he's the best person alive.
Is he going to make you cry again?
I mean, if he made you cry before, maybe he'll make you cry now. But shortly after this docuseries came out, Steve went on TikTok. Follow him, by the way. I forgot what his TikTok name is because it's very confusing and hard to remember. But you'll find him when you look him up on TikTok. Yeah, he literally just said face to face on his phone, tablet, whatever. Hey, just checking in. How you doing? And he just allowed people to just comment. And all Steve did was just watch the comments on the video. Because as you can understand, a lot of people feel like their childhoods were affected. And maybe people are just going through some shit in their lives that don't have to do with the docuseries. But I liked how Steve approached it. Like, hey, like, here I am, this calming, comforting presence from your childhood, being aware that you probably have seen this docuseries that I've like, that's like really fucked up your childhood or what you thought was a perfect childhood. So without even actually referencing the docuseries specifically, he just acted as a impromptu therapist. Like, hey, just checking in. Like, how you doing? How you feeling right now? And that's it. Elmo did the same thing on Twitter, I think, not too long ago.
Oh, why?
Yeah, I think Elmo like made news where he put a tweet up like, oh, hey, you know, this is Elmo. I just say checking to see how you're doing. And then you don't know until people do stuff like that, how little people are asked how they are doing. Like, you can simply ask how you are doing and someone could just bawl and tell you that, oh my God, my life is shit. And I just need to unload. And thank you for asking me that because I feel like I'm being heard and someone listens to me. And Steve represented that. So that's what I wanted to say. I don't know what your thoughts were about that.
I've got to go find this video of Steve. The last video he did, I cried. In tears cried. So I know this is going to make me cry if I see it. If I just look at it, I'm just going to just boom. I don't know. There's something, like, I agree with you. There is something about that man. He can just say, how are you? And I am that person that will just cry. And so I already know it's going to happen. I already know it. I'm going to watch it. And I'm happy that he did something like that. Because, I mean, everybody who grew up watching his season of Blue's Clues most likely watch these shows that are all referenced in this docuseries. So to him, just be there to say, how are you doing? That's just priceless.
Yeah. Blue's Clues was Nick Jr. / Nickelodeon. So it's all part of the same universe. And I think it's especially poignant for Steve to be doing this because you probably know his story. He had mentioned that while he was on Blue's Clues, he was the happiest depressed person in America. I think initially he had said that he had left the show just, I was getting older and I just wanted to move on and try other things. But I think it was an article with Variety back in 2022 where he just admitted he was clinically going through depression at the time and just got to a point where he couldn't try to fight it anymore, where he just couldn't pretend to be this happy-go-lucky, family-friendly guy. So he especially knows more than anything the importance of looking out for your mental health, the importance of just having someone to talk to, having someone who can listen to you talk about how, you know, maybe you're not feeling so great today and here's why. And I don't even think did Steve ever have those moments in Blue's Clues where he acted as a therapist? No, I mean, but
I don't think so.
What video are you talking about that made you cry that you saw of Steve in the past?
So it was a couple of years ago. It was like in the middle of the pandemic, and all he said in the video, he's like, hey, I know it's been a while, I just want to let you know I'm proud of you. And I burst into tears. I was like, what? Yep. And it choked me up and I cried. I'm getting teary-eyed thinking about it now. I cried. Man, that video got me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like he was a hero to a lot of us in our childhood. He was someone that we looked up to and someone that we just enjoyed watching when we were at our most innocent and wide-eyed. So going through the shit that we're going through as adults to just have that call back to our childhood, like this representation of our comfort food mixed in with his, you know, acceptance of like, hey, you're an adult in the present, you're going through some shit, how are you? Like, it's not easy. And I know, like, it's just, it's a great mixture. So I had watched Blue's Clues here and there back in the day, but it was only like when I was staying home from school and I was like a little bit older, so maybe I didn't enjoy it as much as my younger cousins and siblings. But I've always appreciated who Steve was and who he meant to the culture. So, yeah, I mean, the TikTok video, I recommend it to you. It's not that eventful. It's literally him just like watching in silence the comments go by. I don't even think you can see the comments at this point, but yeah, it's great that he didn't even think to directly reference the docuseries or feel like he had to go on this like specific diatribe of what he thought. He just kind of had this idea of like, you know, the people who watched my show likely watched these shows, as you said, and they're probably hurting and just want to unload. And I'm here to listen.
I am grateful for Steve. You're amazing.
Yeah. All right. What an episode. What an episode. Well, if you have thoughts about Quiet on Set, please email us, thedeliciousrecap@gmail.com. You can always reach out to us on social media at Family Matters Rewatch Pod, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Threads. How can people follow you, Andrew?
You can follow me on all... Nope, not all yet. Okay, so Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Pinterest at AJ Vanderton. Excuse me, I have hiccups. That's where you can follow me at. And you can interact with me. Somebody sent me a DM. Is that what it is? On Facebook Messenger? I don't know.
No, you can still call it a DM. Yep.
Okay. Somebody sent me a message on there, something about the podcast. I have not read it because I have not reopened Facebook Messenger. So don't hate me. I will read your message tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. Andrew's thinking about you. Oh, dear fan. Don't worry. Be patient.
I am thinking about you. I hope that you're a fan and not a scam.
This should be a t-shirt.
Okay, we're making a merch.
So many merch ideas that are coming up. Cool. All right, I know that we talked about a very serious subject, but I know you and your brilliant way of thinking, I know you'll find some way to smoothly transition us to our closing.
Okay, so to everyone who this left a bitter taste in your mouth, that is okay. Sometimes you have to eat your broccoli, and that means finding out about the world. And it's always not deliciousness, but we will let the deliciousness ring that these people get justice.